Welcome to the Vibrant Living Network. Have you ever wondered what is possible beyond possible? What is the thing you've been wondering and inquiring about? Are you just feeling stuck and don't know why? Are you thinking or are you seeing? Seeing allows us to expand and have this other experience. We want to invite you for that wake-up call. We want to invite your spirit, your soul, so to be more alive, more connected. Glenn Brooks has been a life coach for over 33 years, author of Divorced to Patterns, Not Each Other, an explorer of what is possible. He has worked with people all around the world. Join us for a wake-up conversation, a dialogue with you. We will have some of the most interesting contributors. We will be talking to some of the most interesting people and have some of the most resourceful teachers, wisdom-filled people from around the world join us. Share your voice, ask the questions, become free of the known into a new world of possibility. We are going to talk about all the things you wonder about: how to live, how to heal, how to connect, how to love, how to be seen. Your life is precious. Enjoy it.
Hello, I'm Glenn Brooks. Welcome to Vibrant Living. Welcome, welcome.
Thank you.
To the Vibrant Living team today. Let's do a circle. This is so I work and explore with people how to communicate, be, and live their vibrant message, and how that impacts their life, their families, everything. Let's start off with Dr. Gail Randall. Dr. Gail Randall has been a hero of mine, a team member, a professor at UCLA, a doctor that helps people open up their eyes and their experience to new levels of health. The inquiry, what is big health anyway? And I'm honored to have her with us today. I'm glad she's delighted, but she's on the Vibrant Living team. And there you are, Dr. Gail Randall, the general, sitting to my right here.
Dr. Randall, Madeline is my actual name. My friends call me, and I'm blessed to be here. Thanks, Glenn.
No, you're welcome, Madeline, deeply. Sherry, the dog mystic, being in deep tune with your dog. I just left a message for Kevin Behan. He's written a book called Your Dog Is Your Mirror, and first of all, deeply welcome to you. Say hello to everybody. What's the dog mystic message of the day? Honored to work with you. I was waiting for you for years. I knew the show was going to come forward. Now we got the book forthcoming, The Dog Mystic, being in deep tune with your dog, and really being in deep tune with life.
Thank you very much. And I'm very grateful to be here. And today I'm going to be talking about some separation anxiety issues that plenty of dogs, unfortunately, are having.
This dog barking behind me is separation anxiety, by the way. I can feel it coming up. I didn't realize the extent how much that impacts dogs and how they get mislabeled and mistreated. And it's a good topic, and we can get the mystical view. All right, we're gonna get into that today. We're gonna get into dealing, healing with separation anxiety. What is that called? It's called, it's got a name in human attachment theory. What is it called? It's called, I used to have the name down, but it's the moment when the baby or the child senses the mother or the father's not coming back. And that changes everything. It's got a name. But it's in the dog kingdom too. And we're here to, I guess, bond with the dog kingdom. Jennifer Rowe. Thank you, Sherry. Thank you, Marlene.
Thank you.
Marlene. I'm sorry, I practiced Marlene's name for like 2 months. I'm just doing the mantra of Marlene. That's what was happening. You guys heard that. Madeleine. Jennifer Rowe practices Red Hat Qigong, and she works with people one-on-one. A helicopter's coming at you for Jen right now. I don't know why. It's a yellow helicopter. Start up there.
I must have called it in.
Yeah. You know, well, you don't know. You do know. But I had an opportunity to meet one of your clients, Allie. And the first meeting with Allie was remarkable. And I welcome you today. And we're going to I want to get into this bigger theme today of vibrant movement How do we move when we feel, you know, cut off or disconnected or you know, feel stuck? So I want to explore with each of you this movement. Now, I mentioned Jen's client. And what was so beautiful about this, we had another conversation, and we're going to introduce you to her. What did you say, December 18th?
I believe it's the 19th in 2 weeks.
The 19th. I was warming up mm-hmm. to the – that was a warm-up mention. The 19th, the previous – yeah, so we're going to – so what was really striking about Vibrant Movement, and this is going to be one of our themes today, is when I had the conversation – what I learned from Ali, and I want to share this with you guys at another level, and really maybe even do like a several-week course on it. How do you really come from a new identity, right? How do you actually begin a new identity? Because usually what happens is we think we want to get back to normal, or we want to feel better again, which is legitimate. But another frame of reference could be that we could begin to live from this new place of vibrancy. And on so many levels, Ali's such an example of that. Thank you, Jen. My inside vibrant writer, something you don't learn in school. You don't learn vibrant writing in school. You got to go hide behind a tree or go to the ocean or break the rules. Or as Julia Cameron said, one day I was driving on the Mass Pike, and Julia Cameron, the author of The Artist's Way, she said, I'll tell you one thing for sure. She was a best-selling author at the time. She said, you know, if your writing teacher said there's no way you can make it, you're a terrible writer, don't bother. She says, you're a writer. She goes, cultivate that in yourself. So you're a vibrant writer. A lot of you people are what I call the eccentrics, game changers, hunters. You don't speak in a regular linear language, and you could use help bringing that writing alive. And I'm just honored to have you on the team. Jesse McGuire.
Thank you.
Welcome. Yeah. I was signaling you, this woman just stopped a car to look at me. There's a vibration going on there.
Yeah.
It's a vibration. I do practice being a conductor during the day. As a matter of fact, there's a book called Why Conductors Live Longer. It's because they conduct. It's because they move their arms in that rhythmic fashion. So deep health is everything to do with vital, rhythmic pulsations. So vital movement, vital sensations. Jesse, you've written books on natural health. Yeah, you work with all kinds of healers, and people help them bring some of their thoughts to a different level of connection and clarity. What have you learned, or what have you discovered about this topic of, let's call it vibrant awakening, or vibrant? I was going to call it originally, it's this movement that comes where people don't go back to normal. They actually just got out. In my life, I've had many moments. Like I would have certain patterns, and then I realized the pattern just would leave, and I had a new life ahead of me. Like I stopped getting headaches, as an example. They just left. But that was my pattern for many years. I would go into a certain – and now I feel like I'm more conscious, and, you know, meeting modeling, that was another level. What is something you've learned from working with all the health authors? And I want to welcome you as a vibrant inside. I'm so happy you're on the Vibrant Writing team, by the way, and working with some of these pioneers regularly and editing, and it's an honor to work with you. What would you say, is there something you've learned recently or over the last 15 years from some of these healing gurus, they call them that, that has really shifted your life or how you deal with things now differently?
That is a good question. I think writing, the creative process, can be quite an interesting way of expanding your mind and creating movement in your consciousness. So I've certainly found myself in I've been writing in very different states of mind. But I'm always soaking up all the knowledge that I'm writing about. So that's quite amazing because knowledge can take you to new places too, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, I guess dealing with the unknown, I think, might be one of the bigger challenges of healing or health dilemmas. You know, not knowing where to go, where to. In some sense, we want to go back to something, but in some sense we also, it's not the life pulse that's there. It's really in this next moment. So, you know, when I talked to Ali last week and Jen about this vibrant healing, I realized there's not many frames of reference, because a lot of times when we go to a practitioner or we go to someone, they reference what was maybe or what could be again, but the conversation of this new level of vibrancy and moving into vibrancy. So that was the number one thing. Well, the first time that me and modeling, Dr. Randall, we had a conversation with Dr. Andy Rosenfarb, and he said one thing on the conversation that changed everything on the universe. Everything. Everything. I knew you were going to ask me what it is. So he was on the way to Alaska for a trip, and he said that 98% of eye doctors, now we could be talking about any frame of reference, but this is so big. He said that 98% of eye doctors, most conventional eye doctors, don't treat you, see you from the perspective of the eye has the capacity for cellular rejuvenation. And when he said that, I said to Madeline, I said, you know, we got to work with Andy forever, because it's that is a significant pivot. It's a significant place to live from. So rather than just kind of getting people into normal, and this is the same thing with a team of people. So when I hung up, when I had a meeting with Jesse this morning, and I realized with the Vibrant Living Challenge, our 8-week challenge, that really brings people to a new level of vibrancy and connection. I want people to also initiate this practice of being a vibrant writer and then having a vibrant writing partner. So that was one of the things that I was realizing, that this conversation of the conversation I had 10 years ago was a conversation with Dr. Richard Moss about the Ultimate Hospital. And the ultimate hospital conversation was, what would an ultimate hospital be? What would be in that ultimate hospital? What would be so different than a conventional hospital? So just kind of stretching into that. So I'll say one more thing, then I want to open this up. So the one thing I wanted to say was that Bernie Siegel started a project at Yale University, and it was called the Exceptional Patient Project. And what he found was is that you talked about consciousness, Jesse, and you know, Sherry's talking about separation anxiety. Well, when people got diagnosed with what they would consider a devastating illness, that they started to, so Bernie was encouraging people to live as if they could get up in the morning and order their favorite ice cream. It's one of the things he would kind of joke to people about. So he would kind of say to live your days if you could do the most favorite thing. And in this program, it's called Exceptional Patients Program. I just was hanging out with Bernie probably a couple of years ago. And he spent a whole day kind of – he was with us, and he was saying that some of these people have these spontaneous healings. The lawyer who changes from, like, being a lawyer to being a comedian. And it was another dramatic thing about that is that the only way that Bernie would work with people – and we're talking about moving forward vibrantly, and we're talking about getting a new feel – and so with Bernie, well, the only way Bernie would work with people is if they drew a picture. And so from the picture, that's how he would treat them. He did a drawing. And one of the drawings that struck me, because he brought about 100 drawings, was this woman. She's in this hospital room. She got diagnosed with some form of something about, you know, some aspect of cancer. But if you looked at a picture that she drew about her hospital room, there is a sun, like, beaming into her room, and her body's all connected. And I remember seeing it, and it was such an inspiring – and he was saying she healed, like, very quickly. Like, within weeks, she was in a totally different place. But if you looked at other pictures as an example, because vision – and we work with people with imagery, vibrant imagery. So if you looked at other people's pictures, their drawings, sometimes you see the legs off to the side of the bed. You might see the arms in the air. So there's something right now, and when you get up in the morning and before you go to bed and moments in the day, is to see that – to get that sense, like, well, how do you see yourself, and then how do you see the people around you? So imagery, in terms of vibrancy, is one of the most powerful medicines. There's something that Madeleine had said to me that took me a while to catch, and this is how we talked about heroic moments. This was a heroic moment that I had with Madeleine. So the heroic moment was I was going through this, you know, I was going through a challenge, going through a crisis. And she said, Madeleine said that this is because you're gaining new seeing. And it was the first time that I I kind of was in that realm. I already knew I was soul seeing. I already knew something was happening. But somehow when she said it, it allowed me to rest in it. In other words, her insight, her awareness became contagious. And when that was contagious to me, my spirit, my sense of buoyancy had changed. And that shifted, it shifted how I was able to operate and move and be. Up until then, I was in this other place. And that's why we actually need each other. We need each other to actually gain relational seeing. And that and relational seeing is beyond our own looking. So that was a moment of that was a heroic moment, Jesse. You talked about heroic. I love heroic moments. I love heroic. That was a heroic moment of my interaction with Madeleine from a place of such trust and wonder and beyond explanation. Sometimes heroic moments are beyond explanation.
Exactly.
But it's peace in my heart.
It's having an openness to something greater and having faith in that. You mentioned it earlier, in something that may be unknown, even.
Yes.
Having faith in it, and it's a spiritual connection. You make that connection, initiate the healing response.
Say more.
Right?
Yes, yeah, I'm loving where you're going, yes.
So that's what it's all about. You know, when I've been doing this for 40 years, and that's the key. Many factors, you know, change in perspective, you know, people that are willing to change their diet, their lifestyle, all that stuff. But the key thing, you know, of course, support is important. Like you said, a relationalness, whether community or family or friend or healer mm-hmm. or significant other, but openness
yeah.
to that something that is greater than you, that you may not even completely understand, but having faith in it and making the spiritual connect, then it happens.
You know, when you first sent me supplements, you first sent me the stuff that you recommended, the thing that was different about that than everything else was you. Because it was an energy ritual, and I was so consistent, and I am consistent. I haven't missed a day. And I don't know, 200 days? You know better than I do the days. But it's been at least 200 days, I think. So I realized the imagery that I had from us, from our... I guess the imagery changed. It was the imagery had changed significantly. And the funny thing is, I'm an imagery practitioner, and yet your divine impulse and intelligence came in my system. And so actually taking the supplements wasn't just like taking supplements. It was part of the ceremony that we put together that you sort of blessed and gave me momentum on. And I still feel such gratitude, and I study it in myself because I want to pass it on to people. So that they could have they could move into that as a perpetual thing, and
yeah.
So when I hear it, you know, when I had Jen, when I was working with when I was exploring with Allie, and she said that one thing. She said, so she's coming back from two what a lot of people call traumas, two traumas that are pretty significant. Now, when I talk to people about how they've discovered other levels of vibrancy, I just let them take the lead, and I just kind of get really curious, and I listen to them from my whole body, my whole being. But there was two things I would say that were major for Ali. But the thing that was the most, that got my attention the most, which is many things with Ali, actually, Jen, but it was one point in the conversation where she said, she goes, my leg started to burn. And where she was kind of talking about gaining new neurological ability, And her legs were significant because all of a sudden she was having this new movement. And I asked her to speak from her legs, to be her legs and speak to me from her legs, which is a lot of fun, by the way. I recommend you do that with family members over the holidays. So take them by surprise. Don't let terminal neurology overtake your gatherings with the family. So, Jen, I'm still psyched about it. I still really enjoyed. And I love Madeleine. I love your comments and your feedback and your presence. I'm so happy you're here today. And Jesse, you know, you're the blessing of whatever the time sequence is. Thank you for being here, because I know I cannot do this on my own. I don't at all. As a matter of fact, everything that I work with people on, I teach in a relational circle, and I encourage people to take a lot of risks with a lot of sustainability, a lot of root. So I have people on stage sometimes dancing, and Now, we're going to repost these videos, but we're gonna, so these videos are at a conference that I put together with Bernie Siegel and others. And there's one moment in the conference where we invite people to come on stage, and spontaneously a whole bunch of people came on stage and started dancing. And that was totally unrehearsed. So, Jen, that's what I when I talk about this vibrant, I'm laughing. I said this to Madeline. I said, well, we're going to focus on moving forward vibrantly. And she says, that's something I taught you. And it's true. She has her own way. Even though I've been practicing this for, like, you know, 35 years, there's another level of teaching. And this is where relational intelligence comes in healing and going to a next level. That relational intelligence supersedes our own intelligence. There's another level of it. It's like sitting around, you know, and you see certain colors, but when you see it together, it amplifies. So, Jen, what did you want to – I wanted to have you share something. I know I went a little bit of it, not quite a tangent. I'm just a nonlinear wisdom moment, I'll call it. If we could give it that title.
I like that.
Yeah, okay. I just made it up. More people like Jen in my life. That was a note I'm writing to myself. Thank you.
Allie, she's very special. She has been through a lot. And by the time she had come to me, you know, I think she had said it had been 2.5 years that she'd been dealing with her symptoms. And, you know, a lot of that was body pain. A lot of that was brain injury symptoms. She'd been told by, you know, doctors that she needed to be on pills, and she just refused to believe it. So, you know, when you talk about that vibrant, like vibrant movement or vibrant forwarding,
yeah,
or however,
yeah,
you want to coin it, I mean, that I think, yeah, it really does tie into what Gail, you know, or Dr. Randall said about,
yeah, yeah,
you know, she has that ability to really trust and connect and, like, look past, you know, maybe how she was raised or what she was told or what these people are telling her, knowing that there's more and that she has that connection and believing that and having the ability to just say, no, that's not what's true for me. I'm going to try something else. And, you know, her and I had this instant connection the minute she walked in the door. And I think that also, you know, it's like what you talk about with Dr. Randall sending you, you know, whatever the medicine is or the supplements,
yeah, yeah,
you're on.
Yeah.
Part of that connection is that relational,
yeah,
piece where,
yeah,
you know, she can help guide you, but you, and you trust her. So it allows that opening. And that's kind of, you know, also a dynamic that Allie and I share. And so, but yeah, a lot of it is just willingness to not conform to what you're being told and knowing that there's more and that you can tap into that. And it's about addressing the root of the problem rather than masking it. You know, I mean, to really truly heal, isn't it about getting to that root and finding that vibrancy within, opposed to just, you know, alleviating a symptom temporarily or, you know, like there's just so much more there.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That, of course.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you.
Is it dog barking or?
That's actually one of Sherry's dogs. We're curing it of separation anxiety, right, as we do the show live. Thank you, Sherry. That's the anxiety the dog used to have. He was just demonstrating it. Dr. Randall, speak up a little. Your beautiful voice. Just talk a little louder so we can hear you clearer.
No, I tested this out before I got on, and he said I sounded fine, so I'm confused.
All right, don't be confused.
He's going to give me apparently.
All right.
Anyway.
Go ahead. Go ahead. You, because Jen would just summoning your name.
I thought someone said something. I just couldn't understand what was said. But no, a lot of the vibrant movement is really about opening up to something more. I mean, and a willingness to dive into what that is.
So if you watch, you watch a movie. I use movies in a lot of my vibrant speaking work, which is really about movement and opening up to some of the message. But there's a couple of movies that come to mind. So one.
Hello?
No, I don't hear any.
I think the mute button was
pressed. Is it just me?
Oh, yeah,
drop. Okay. Hello. I wanted to say something, actually. I thought it was interesting about Ali, how her legs started burning. Because from what I've learned from my various studies is that the legs represent moving forward in life.
Right.
Yeah.
That was an interesting.
And you know what's so funny about that, Jesse, is that's what she tied it into as well. And that feeling that she experienced was after the session. And we talked about, you know, how it was really just the energy moving and what she needed to release and how symbolic it was of that.
Yes. The body is a metaphor. What's going
right.
on?
Yeah.
I've learned for years, you know, I read the body like the farmer reads the land, and body parts will talk to you, and then you can interpret that for the patient and help them through what they're
mm-hmm.
going through.
Right.
Yeah, by the way, Jesse, that's what caught me, and thank you, Madeline. I loved when she talked about her legs burning, because that might have been missed, you know what I mean? Like, it might have been missed when someone took the, you know, it might have been missed medically even, you know what I mean? Like, or it might have been seen as problematic. I think the interpretation and the, so in the film, The Razor's Edge, I have people, basically we have a night where people play certain characters. I ask people to really play out their, you know, in my vibrant speaking circles, I have people play, if they had superpowers, what would they be and express? And so in The Razor's Edge, the film, the character, he meets this woman and she's like living in this underworld. She's kind of like, basically she's entrapped by these, by the really dark people. She's like almost like a human slave in the sex slave trade. And but Bill Murray sees her. So in the beginning of the show, I talk about thinking versus seeing. He sees her and she comes awake and she starts to evolve and move forward. And this is, you know, metaphor for really not just healing, but really going beyond your miasmic or your blocked state, right? It's kind of like, how many times has a doctor sat down with you or someone close to you and really spoke to you from seeing you? Like really from seeing who you could be. James Worsley, a very well-renowned acupuncturist, was saying that when he sees someone, he always sees who they could be. Like if he cracks the door, he'll say, "Oh, that woman could be a cello player," and then he'll see the whole family being able to shift into this other state. Because often we see people at the level of the problem. So in the Razor's Edge, Bill Murray sees her, and there's this one moment where Bill Murray leaves the scene, and someone says something really mean to her, and that was it. She devolved in that moment. So the question, then the inquiry is, how do we keep deepening and letting this new state of aliveness become a way of life and kind of cultivate that? So rather than the things that were said to you or you were demeaned a certain way, you got used to that. What's the new level? And that's why I developed the Vibrant Living Challenge, because I wanted to develop this. And there was one woman who was significant. Barbara Feldman had written a book called My Brain Listens to Every Word I Speak. And she had healed from a brain injury. And she talked about how she developed a conversation with her brain. And that's what I want to develop with in the Vibrant Living Challenge, which is our 8-week program for people who want to go to a new level in partnership. I call relational intelligence and develop claims versus goals. So, Sherry, your dog has calmed down significantly, by the way. He's in the backyard. So he came to this house. It's a beautiful house. A little snowy. We're going to talk about dogs. How dogs can help heal us and renew us. We'll talk specifically about separation anxiety with the whole Vibrant Living team and you in a moment. Your life's precious. Enjoy it. Thank you for that question about heroicness, Jesse. That was good. It's still burning in my soul. Stay with us. I'm Glenn Brooks.
The Real Conscious Connection. Om Times Radio. IOM FM. Host your show on IOM FM, the radio network of Om Times Media, one of the more recognized brand names in the conscious community, and is backed by the extensive marketing reach of Om Times. Hosting a show on IOM FM immediately connects you with our extensive, dedicated community.
I'm Kathy Kathy Williams, host of Sexy Mom Abundant Life radio show on Thursdays at 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific. On the show, we explore living abundantly in every area of your life, ways to let go of limiting patterns and beliefs, and to step into the flow of creativity and possibility, knowing you are supported by the universe.
Opiates has taken everything and everyone I've ever loved away from me. Everything.
I blew my ankle out and I got prescribed pain pills by my doctor.
If making my detox public is going to help somebody, I'm all for it. I just wish I would have had a warning.
Opioid dependence can happen after just 5 days. Know the truth, spread the truth. A message from Truth, the Ad Council, and ONDCP.
Hello, I'm Glenn Brooks. You're listening to the Vibrant Living Network and our Vibrant Living team, our building team. If you want to be part of our team, you're interested in more about Vibrant Living, you'd be in touch. I'll give you my personal number. If this is speaking to you, let's speak, 413-345-3747. All right. Sherry Marquez arrives at this point in her life being the dog mystic. It started about 19 years ago. And a new series we're doing on being paid for who you are. I thought about you because you had this pull and this nudge for many, many moons as a young child. So separation anxiety is it's a big deal in the human kingdom and the dog kingdom. So share with us some things. You said some things that were totally surprising to me today about when to get a dog, because I would have thought about it differently. So why don't we address that? First of all, let's define separation anxiety as it relates to dogs and the language that you want the audience to kind of get your take on. What's your take on separation anxiety and dogs?
Well, separation anxiety is one of the hardest things to solve, just because the people in the home and, like, you know, the owners of the dog and the people have to change their lifestyle and their everyday habits just to lessen the anxiety when they're getting ready to leave the home. And separation anxiety is it causes major destruction. I've unfortunately seen some severe cases of separation anxiety where the dogs big dogs have torn up their whole entire mouths and broken crates, like metal crates. They've dug, like, eventually, I mean, after a long period of time, they've actually been able to chew the wood off of and like out of the bottom of the door to make a big enough hole that they can go through. But I mean, like, you know, it's pure anxiety that's like overtaking their body, but it's pure destruction to their body because they're doing such damage to their body, to their teeth, to their gums, to their mouths, to their bodies, just to try and get out of a crate. Because, you know, creating your dog or confining your dog is important, especially if you have a rescue or if you have a puppy, just because when they have free roam of the whole entire house, then they have too much freedom. And then, like, you know, if they have a whole bunch of toys to play with, if they get bored of the toys, then of course they're going to start chewing on something else that they're not supposed to be chewing on. So I mean, like, you know, it's a very serious issue. And like, you know, another thing that I have been explaining is when the breeders are selling the puppies way too young, then that's causing like even more anxiety for puppies. Because I mean, like, you know, that I have in the past, maybe like two years, like from 19 years to 2 years ago, it was a little bit older dogs that have like the anxiety because of what happened in their lives. But recently this year, it's happening with much younger puppies. But you know, the most important thing for I guess for people who work at home and mm-hmm. for teachers as well, the dogs need separation. The dogs need, like, it's like you put your baby down for a nap from like 12 to 2, then the dog should be separated away from the people for like a certain amount of time. Even if you work from home, and if every single day you can, you know, just manage to leave the house for 15 minutes, even if you're making yourself go for a ride or go to the store or do something where you're actually out of the house and leaving the dog home, it's important so the dog gets used to not having someone at the home, in the home at all times. For all the teachers that think that's the best time to get a dog is during the summer or during any of their holiday seasons where they have, you know, 3 weeks off, or like, you know, 2 to 3 weeks off or 3 months off, that's the worst time to get a puppy or rescue a dog, because they're home all the time, and that's the start of their bonding situation with their dog. So once they start back to school and they're working for 8 hours and no one is home and in the home, then the dogs are totally confused because they're always used to having somebody with them. So so that's my first suggestion in regards to teachers.
Okay.
You know, just get the dogs at a different time than on your break. And then like when you do first get a dog, then you know, either crate training or confining into a smaller room or keeping them in a playpen is important, because you're not sure exactly what the well, for puppies, you're just teaching them you're working on housebreaking, and you're working on making sure that they're not chewing on things that they're not supposed to and destroying the house. But then you'll also, for the rescue dogs, you're not sure exactly what happened to them in the past. So, you know, you're not sure if they have anxiety or what they're going to destroy. So I mean, like, you know, when you first get the dogs, they're creatures of habit. So I mean, like, when they're used to that habit of having someone home all the time, and then you leave, then, you know, that's when the anxiety gets much stronger. And, you know, and in regards to changing a person's habit to help with lessen any separation anxiety, whenever the dog is following your every single move and they're watching you get ready, they learn your habits of, you know, putting your makeup on, doing your hair, putting your clothes on. So anytime that they're staring at you and watching what you're doing, that anxiety is building and building and building. So by the time that you actually walk out of the house, then that is exactly why people think that the dogs do it on purpose. They're like, I left the house, and I mean, like, the dog had just gone to the bathroom. Well, they have nervous. It's a nervous stomach. It's just it's the same thing as a person. You know, when a person has a nervous stomach, they can't help themselves from either going to the bathroom, throwing up. Yeah. I mean, it just happens. You know, so they're not doing it on purpose. It's just the anxiety that it causes. So.
Well, you know, you bring up another interesting topic, and we'll get the panel on this one. So in Peter Levine's book on releasing trauma releasing, he says that undomesticated animals, even if they're tranquilized, when they wake up, they always do two things: they shake and they cry. And what he's saying, even when human beings, when they get traumatized, they go to the movies, they go shopping. So in our culture, it's an interesting question. I like delivering that line, by the way, shopping or the movies. That's really interesting to me, this notion of – see, I never quite – so I want to bring – well, okay. There's this other notion that when you contain the nervous system by heavy blankets, some postures in yoga, basically you contain the nervous system. And what happens when we're uncontained, we have a lot of free-floating anxiety. Your analogy of like getting ready to go out, wow, I just got that one. Let's do a panel on this. Let's get other people's views, because I think part of it in our culture in general, we have a lot of free-floating anxiety and we don't know how to contain and settle. And so you're saying to some extent the dog catches that, or if it doesn't catch it from us, it's just kind of the environment is feeding on this anxiety in the dog. Yes?
Yes. I mean, like, you know, it's the – but I mean, like, you know, you got to realize that every dog is different. Every dog has their own personality. So, I mean, like, you know, when the dog has anxiety, that's when the anxiety is starting, just from knowing and learning the person's habits and watching their habits.
All right, so. habits and separation anxiety for the dog. Who has a question? Let's go around. Marlene, you've always had – Marlene, that's my new mantra, the mantra you taught me about the spiritual frequency of your name. What's your take on the separation anxiety?
Okay.
Say it again.
Madeleine.
Madeleine. I had it for at least two or three months, by the way. Madeleine, please.
So
thank you, Pam.
You want me to say something about separation anxiety in dogs?
Apparently so. I called on you unexpectedly, yes.
Well, I don't know about that specifically. I mean, I have seen that, but I'd like to talk about our family dog, our buddy. And his thing is he gets anxious in the beginning, like when he sees new people.
Yeah.
Even when he sees me, he just loves me so much he can't see himself, and that he jumps. And even though we took him to school, we're teaching him not to jump, but he has claws, and he's fairly good size, and he doesn't have a mean bone in his body. He's the sweetest dog, and the whole family, we were all together for Thanksgiving, went out. And then I was left with Buddy, and he was like totally different dog. He followed me from room to room. He was super quiet. He slept. He was so cozy and sleepy. And so what about that?
Oh, and I want to thank you. And then I also want to mention, thank you, Madeleine. Madeleine is brilliant as usual. The other thing that I noticed, Sherry, I notice these homecoming videos when vets unexpectedly come home, and I usually cry when I watch this. But the dog just – the nervous dog just goes bananas. It's just so excited to see the owner. So it's a combination of ice being anxiety, but maybe also just pure excitement. So what's your comment on Buddy? Because the first time we see a dog we haven't seen in a while, the dogs get very – super excited. What's your take on that? Does that have anything to do with separation anxiety?
That's just pure excitement.
How to teach him not to do, because some like older person, he could, push him down or something. So,
the best thing to do, if you know that someone is coming over, to keep the dog on the leash with you. So, and, you know, teaching the dog the off command.
Yeah.
So anytime that they are, and anytime that he goes to jump up, then you're pulling back on the leash and
right.
Not a,
yeah, that's
a
what we try
big
to do.
Pull.
And
it's
leave him attached to the leash, whether we're holding on to it or not. He seems to act better.
Right.
Hmm.
Well, I mean, because your calmness and your calm energy is like whatever you're thinking and feeling goes from you through the leash and to him. And you're in control when the leash is on. When the leash is off, then it's just his innate response of, you know, I mean, like when wolves are in their pack, that's their excitement. They're jumping up. They're like, oh my gosh, I'm just so excited. So I mean, like, you know, that's just his innate personality.
Yeah, and it's
so,
his darling, but you know, it can damage.
Yeah.
The person.
Yes. So I mean, like, you know, if you know that someone is coming over, then it's keeping the leash on him, and not giving like a strong, like a pull of like a tug of war pull. It's more or less like a snap, like a snap and release
right.
pull. So as soon as he jumps up, then off. And then if he does it again the second time, nope. Like you get the no in there because I mean, like, you know, there's with the off command, you don't want to keep repeating off because once you repeat the command, then you're just asking him and he's like, no, I'm just too excited. I can't do this. So the first time that he does it, he jumps up, you pull, you give him like a little pop on the leash off. The second time that he does it, nope, off.
Yeah.
So I mean, like, you know, that's first. Now, another thing that you can do is, this all depends on the dog as well. If the dog is not petrified of noises and fireworks and really loud bangs, then you can make a shake can, which is a soda can that has pennies in it. So,
no, he's afraid of loud noises. Yeah, he doesn't like fireworks at all.
Okay, so...
But I guess
so
it's just going to take more time. But he, you know, he's better.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But for you, what you can do when you walk in the home, in your home, then you can get a spritzer bottle that has a very high stream of spray. My favorite is from Home Depot,
mm-hmm.
just because like it goes like 20 feet. So I mean, like it's like goes really far.
I
have
several
really...
dogs and Buddy included. They like that. They like, oh yay, a game. Let's fight the
but
water.
But see, the main thing there is you keep it behind your back and you walk in the door, and then as soon as he jumps up, you squirt him in the face and then put it behind your back again. So it's like that sudden, like off. And
I know
and...
that works for some dogs, but it's not mine.
Not yours. Okay.
I need to mention one thing. It's just one thing because I promised I would. So. I give away vacations, and I'm driving to these retreat centers and inns off very snowy, icy mountains. Or I'm sitting right now in a field of about 25 inches of snow right now. So I want to thank Cooper Tire. They just sent me the North Country. So when I go to when I'm doing a broadcast or I'm in an inn or a retreat center or Magdalene's coming and we're doing a retreat, we got to sometimes go up these roads, and I'm entrusting North Country this year to be our tire that will climb us up because I'm going to be giving away vacations, and we're actually going to be doing the Vibrant Living Challenge in Vermont, and we're going to send people to me. I'm considering Costa Rica as for the exemplifiers, so we're going to be doing an 8-week challenge there. All right, so I want to thank Cooper Tire for the new tire of the North Country, climbing up the back roads with snow and ice. It's a lot of fun not getting stuck in those situations. All right, let's go to Jen, who's been raising her hand, Sherry, very patiently, and now she's standing on her chair. Let's see what she wants to share. Jen.
Well, I was going to share my experience with Gus, but I guess I'd rather ask you a question about do you notice that dogs that have that much nervous behavior, that they're either like rescues that have a history of abuse or they have really nervous owners and they're feeding off of that energy of them? Or do you think it's completely unrelated? Well, I mean, like, you know, it can be rescues, and, like, you know, because we're not sure exactly what happened to them in the past, and so it can be rescues. But I mean, I the separation anxiety doesn't start from the anxiety of the person. Sometimes it can, like your explanation of what you do with Gus, and you give him a visualization of "I'll be home" and "I love you," and that's beautiful. That's like absolutely fabulous.
I love that too. I love that too.
But I mean, like, you know, for the people that make such a big deal when they're leaving the house and. Mommy, we'll be home right up. I promise. Don't worry. And it's okay. And like, the more that they make a big deal of it, the more anxiety that's going to cause. Okay. You know what I'm saying? So, it's almost like the anxiety of the person leaving their dog home is causing more anxiety in that sense. But I mean, like, you know, the problem with the puppies right now, like the very young puppies, is the crate. These puppies at 8 to 10 weeks old are having severe crate anxiety, which has never happened before. But I mean, like, you know, that if a breeder, let's just say a breeder is has all these the mom and all the puppies on a farm on a big piece of land in a beautiful barn or inside the house, and you know, they're in one room and they're not used to being in a crate whatsoever, and then a person purchases the dog and the dog is put in a crate, which they're not used to. They're like, it's almost like you have to get them used to being in a crate, seeing a crate that it's not a bad thing. That's their safe place. You know what I'm saying? And throwing treats in there and throwing balls and, like, you know, just to get them used to being in a crate. But I mean, like, you know, I truly believe that these breeders are not putting the dogs in a crate, and then another person is buying the dog from another state. They're putting a dog, a puppy, a baby. They're putting this baby in a crate in cargo in an airplane. So the trauma that it is causing, and then it's so hard for this new owner that is absolutely in love with this puppy, but is at their wit's end because they don't know any kind of the right confinement, because the dog has such severe anxiety from the trauma that it would just went through for the transport of just to get the puppy there. You know, I mean, like, it's really, really becoming an issue.
All right. So, I have a quick question, Sherry.
Yes.
Well, let's use someone like, you know, Jesse McGuire, world-renowned, vibrant storyteller, writer, who lives in a big lighthouse, you know what I mean? She doesn't leave her house or lighthouse because she has tons of stacked refrigerators full of organic food. So if she doesn't leave her house and she's writing, which she could, you know, she could write 15 hours a day and maybe watch some movies with Casablanca or something like that. Does she still need to – what is someone who's around the dog? You're saying to put out these – breaks, to build in breaks to help the dog, even Jesse McGuire's, for instance. She should build in breaks, even if the dog's pretty well adapted. It's still essential to build in breaks for the dog. It's good for the dog.
It's still important to have the dog be separated in another room for their nap time. Like, look at it as a nap time.
All right.
Like, that is their 2 hours of pure separation. Even if they do.
Can we use another word besides separation? It sounds so separating.
Well, I don't think Gus could handle that very well.
Gus would not like that at all.
Oh, okay. That's what I was wondering. Okay, so Gus wouldn't like being separated.
No.
Right. I wouldn't either.
But
it seems odd. That's all.
Well, no, yeah, he goes everywhere with me, but there's some times mm-hmm. that he can't. And I just start
right.
talking to him because he knows what stay
right.
means and what goes.
Oh, wow. Right.
And when he has to
wow.
stay, he gets prepared and he lays down and looks at me really sad and he knows he has to stay. But,
wow.
yeah, but he's never
okay.
been created, ever.
Right.
So there
wow.
might be a difference.
Let's do more of this, Sherry. This is a hot topic. And not everybody lives in a big lighthouse or lighthouse like Jesse McGuire. So let's go around. Give out your websites. Jesse's mm-hmm. waving to us from the lighthouse right now. Yeah, did you guys see her? He's very social.
Hello.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah. All right. Why don't you go out and give out your websites? How people could be in touch with you. And the topic today, we're dealing with separation anxiety, but really the ability to move in a forward direction with vibrancy and connection and start from a place beyond going back to normal. I guess we're going to miss
right.
those. Go to my website. I'll have links to everybody's website at vibrantlivingnetwork.com, vibrantlivingnetwork.com, and I'll hook you up with everybody. Have a blessed week. More vibrant living, and it's a way of life. Love your emails and inquiry. Thank you, Sherry.
Thank you.
Thank you, Magdalene.
Have a wonderful week.
Thank you, Jen.
Thank you.
Jesse, that's a blessing. Thank you all. Your life's precious. Enjoy it.
Thank you.
Thank you. Have a good weekend.